The title is The Search for a Spouse as a Potential Spouse. In other words, searching for a good spouse and also becoming the kind of person that a potential spouse would actually want to marry. So imagine you say to your 16-year-old son, you say, make up a list of the characteristics of the woman that you want to marry someday, what she's like, what she likes, what she does. And he puts this list together. You encourage him to be exhaustive with it. Probably a lot of it sounds a lot like his mom in a good way, where if she's good, he's seeing that and encouraged by it and wanting one of those for himself someday. And you say to him, great, you got that list together. Now tell me, would this girl want to marry you? That's the question, right? So it's not just looking for a good spouse, but then, you know, you swung for the bleachers so far, you just struck out. But you also have to become the kind of person as well that this person would want to marry. Turn to Proverbs 31. Remember, Proverbs is written primarily to young men. It begins with a fatherly instruction to young men, Solomon to his son. So it's fatherly advice, and it's often, you could say, gender-specific. It's written to young men throughout. It doesn't mean that it's only applicable to men. Of course, it's applicable to women. It's universal wisdom, so much of it relates to whether you're rich or you're poor, or whether you're old or whether you're young, or whether you're male or you're female. But where it does get gender-specific, the person being addressed throughout Proverbs is a boy, a young man. And that means that when you come to this thing in Proverbs, which is no small topic in Proverbs, of looking for a spouse, it's speaking to a young man about what a right woman looks like and what the wrong woman looks like, the kind to avoid and the kind you may want to pursue. Proverbs 31 is like that. But that doesn't mean that this is only applicable to young men. You might think of Proverbs 31 as the woman who's married with kids, and that's who it's written to. But that misses what's there in the text, that Proverbs 31 is written. Look at verse 1. From King Lemuel, about the wisdom that his mother taught him. And then it goes on by verse 10 to talk about the excellent wife of what we think of as the Proverbs 31 woman. But it's not just about this woman, this potential woman, this excellent wife that he might pursue someday in marriage. And it's not just what King Lemuel should look for, so it's two young men. Let me show you the breadth of different kinds of people. In other words, how Proverbs 31 relates to almost everybody. In fact, everyone here, I think. It relates to unmarried adult moms, because there's actually little mention of her husband in chapter 31. If you're an unmarried adult mom with kids, you're a single mom and it feels like you're pulling double duty, Proverbs 31 is really applicable for you, because we don't know if this husband is a schmuck or not. We don't know anything about him. We don't know if he's a good husband. We don't know if he's around much. There's not much said about him except for when he's outside the home, except that he praises her. So he says, good job. That's about as far as Proverbs 31 tells us of the Proverbs 31 man, you could say. Be encouraged, unmarried adult moms, and be encouraged, yet unmarried single women, or even those who will be single for the rest of their lives. If you never get married, Proverbs 31 is still for you, ladies. You know why? Because what it's describing is not just quintessential motherhood or quintessential wifery. It's quintessential womanhood. It's describing what it means to be a quintessential woman, except for a few verses that are specific to what it means to be a mom and what it means to be a wife. Most of it relates to just what it means to be a woman. Of course, it relates to married, busy moms like we normally think of Proverbs 31 to be. It tells you, Proverbs 31 women, what to be, what to do, and how to pursue becoming this excellent wife. It's also for teenage girls who are 10 years away, 15 years away from the possibility of marriage. It's showing them what kind of woman to be in preparation for adulthood, because you don't just at 18 turn on a switch and start to become Proverbs 31 or instantly become the Proverbs 31 woman. It also shows guys, young men, what kind of godly woman to marry. But it also reminds godly girls what kind of godly guy will like this kind of godly girl. It's applicable to moms and dads in teaching young men what to look for in a wife before it's time to look for a wife, and again, what to become in order to get this kind of wife someday. Again, it's applicable to moms and dads teaching and modeling to their little girls what to be when they grow up and what to pursue even now. So I would encourage you, moms with young girls in the house, go through Proverbs 31 later today, maybe later this week, and think of what these things mean for your 6-year-old, your 8-year-old. How do you get to see this seedling in a 7-year-old that's blossoming by the time they're ready to be married? Because it doesn't happen overnight. How are you encouraging, fostering, watering? How will you get to see this bloom in your own home? All right, let's read Proverbs 31, verses 10 to the end of the chapter, the excellent wife, the Proverbs 31 woman. An excellent wife who can find, for her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She's like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it's still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, "Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates." If you want to follow along on the sermon notes page, I want to give you 4 general principles about this and then 7 specific things in what this woman is to be and what a man is to look for in this kind of woman, a potential spouse. 4 general principles. First, this deserves our utmost thought and care. This topic of looking for a spouse deserves our utmost thought and care. One, because it's difficult. The other, because it's important. You know, if you're married, who you're married to is a big part of your life. For better or for worse, it's central to who you are, not least central to who your kids are. It's central to all of your experiences and what you do from week to week and day to day. It is important, but Proverbs says it's difficult to find one of these good ones. Chapter 31, verse 10, an excellent wife who can find. It's a rhetorical question about the difficulty of it. Who can find an excellent wife? It's hard to find one. And if you could find one, her worth is far above jewels. So if you had to pay for her, thankfully we don't have to pay for wives nowadays. You know, you have to pay the dad anymore a little bit to get the girl, like you did throughout the Old Testament. But if you had to, it would be worth giving up all of your riches, all of your jewels. It'd be worth giving up a great deal in order to have an excellent wife. You could think of Jacob. It'd be worth to keep working for Uncle Laban for many years, that sneaky Laban, in order to have the wife that you have set your heart on and you love. Proverbs 12:4 says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. It's his majesty. It's, you could say, his glory. His wife, if she's excellent, is his glory. Proverbs 18:22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Finding a wife is hard. Finding a good wife is even harder, and it's a gift from God. Proverbs also, though, talks about the consequences of marrying the wrong girl. So outside of Proverbs 31, you have all kinds of descriptions of a bad woman, you could say. What to avoid in looking for a spouse, you could say. Like Proverbs 19:14. House and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Prudent as opposed to being unprudent or lacking discretion. You're to look for a prudent wife, not the opposite. What's the opposite? Proverbs 21:19 says, it's better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing wife. It's better to live outside of a house than inside a house with a contentious, fighting, warring, vexing, worrisome, high maintenance wife. We'll pray for you and your dinner tonight. Think about this. It's saying it'd be better to be out in the storm of the weather than to be in the storm of your house for some men who have these kinds of wives. And so you might say, I think I married one of those. Let me just say up front, before we get into other verses about the women that your son should avoid marrying, you may think you married one, and it's okay to acknowledge that you'd go back and do things different. Don't tell your wife that. It's okay to acknowledge that just up here in your own little brain. Don't even tell a friend to say, if I could go back and do it over again, I wouldn't look for a wife that does whatever that is, okay? But now you are married and you have to trust the sovereignty of God in this. You have to trust that He has purposes even in your mistakes. He has purposes even in your mistakes. And so He has designed your life to be married to the person that you are right now married to. And so you need to trust Him and you need to be all that you can be. You need to be all that you can be as a husband or a wife, despite what they are. Again, remember that the Proverbs 31 woman is what she is, but there's no correlation necessarily, at least in this passage, to what her husband is or isn't. You know what I mean? What is good about her in Proverbs 31 isn't connected to the worth, the ability, the goodness, the skill, the love, the romance, the understanding, the patience of her husband. It just doesn't say much of what her husband is like. That means that for you, you can be a Proverbs 31 woman with a nasty husband, with an unbelieving husband, and you should. You should pursue that to God's glory and for your own joy. Secondly, parents are to be involved in instructing, guiding, and praying. It deserves our utmost thought and care as the person who pursues a relationship. It deserves the utmost thought and care as the parents of the one who is either about to be ready, who will one day be ready, or who is currently ready to possibly pursue a wife. Remember verse 1. It's his mother teaching him what to look for in a wife. If you look at verse 1 and then you jump to verse 10, this whole section is about looking for that excellent wife. It's given, verses 10 and following, given in A to Z format. Each line begins with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet in sequential order. It's like saying from Aleph to Tav, or we would say from A to Z, from Alpha to Omega, this is an encyclopedic reference for an excellent wife, an excellent woman. And a lot of times in Hebrew literature, things would be given that mnemonic form to help the young man, in this case, memorize it. He has it with him all the time. He's walking around, he sees that girl, he watches her, how she behaves, what she says. He thinks of Proverbs 31. Lemuel thinks of what his mom taught him, and he passes it on to us. Parents are to be involved in instructing kids before it's time, in guiding them before and as it's time, and praying with them throughout the whole time. Proverbs 31, as I said, is not the only place in Proverbs that talks about good and bad girls. So let me show you up on the screens here from chapter 6. Proverbs 6. And notice all the stuff about wisdom first before it mentions anything about a woman. My son, gender specific, my son, observe the commandment of your father. Dads have taught this. And do not forsake the teaching of your mother. Moms, model this and teach this. When you walk about, the principles of wisdom will guide you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. When you're awake, they will talk to you. For the commandment, the whole commandment of Proverbs and the fear of the Lord is a lamp and its teaching is light. What for? To keep you from the evil woman. Proverbs is written not as just theoretical wisdom. We already know it's not just ethereal wisdom. It's not just about being philosophers and going to the Areopagus and trying to round off infinity or guess whether the moon is made of cheese or not. It has very practical things about work and sleep and eat. And it also has very practical things about what to look for in a spouse. Proverbs is wisdom. Take this wisdom, my son, put it around your neck, put it on your heart, keep reminding yourself of it, stick to it, keep it to keep yourself from the evil one, the evil woman, not the evil one, the evil woman, like it says in chapter 2, verse 16, keep yourself from the evil woman. Parents need to be active in instructing kids about what marriage is and modeling what marriage is before them at a very, very young age, instructing them on what to do and what not to do in relating to the opposite sex before they're ready, guiding them as they relate to the opposite sex in those peculiar teenage years where they have feelings and they like, but they can't touch. Those kind of things. It means sometimes setting boundaries for your kids, even as, well, they're in puberty, they're about to leave for college, but they're still under your roof. They're still what we would call in our culture, kids. Set boundaries for them in how they relate to the other sex. Do you realize that this simple equation is true? You cannot have immoral relationships. You cannot have immorality without being alone with a girl. It's just that simple. If you just draw up that boundary, you're not to be alone with a girl. Then you don't have at least premarital sex. You might have other sins, of course. There are other sexual things going on that can happen in bedrooms, yes. But as far as being alone with a girl, right there, premarital sex doesn't happen if you don't just be alone. Third, the man is the pursuer once it's time, and the woman is the responder. Chapter 31, verse 10. An excellent wife, who can find? He's supposed to be looking for one to find. An excellent wife, who can she find? No. What's she doing? She's busy. Frankly, the woman here in Proverbs 31, if if she didn't just flip a switch at marriage and become the Proverbs 31 woman, but was kind of these things even before she got married, what was she doing before marriage? She wasn't worried about guys. She wasn't out in the town. She wasn't trying to lure guys in. Proverbs 18:22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing. He who finds a wife. I think that's specific, on purpose. It's the same in almost every marriage story of the Bible, that the man pursues the woman and she responds. You say, well, that's old-fashioned. Okay, we do think it's old-fashioned. We think it's so old-school, it's biblical. That's cool, right? It's not just old-school, it's biblical old-school. It's thousands of years old. You're right, it's old. You're right, it's just tradition, but it's God's tradition, and I think we should honor it. I think that's why, even today in our American secular culture, guys ask girls to marry, don't they? I mean, guys, single guys, or even married guys, could you imagine if your wife got down on a knee, before you were married, she got down on a knee, and she held out the ring, and she proposed to you? I mean, not only would that not be good, I don't think guys would respond to that like this. Ooh! Like girls do. When guys propose to them, girls do the little dance and they flap their hands like they're little butterflies. Guys who respond to that, or respond to girls who are proposing like that, they shouldn't be marrying girls. Right? Usually. So look at the opposite here. Look up on the screen here. Proverbs chapter 7, the opposite of a man finding a wife and finding a good thing. Chapter 7, verse 10, behold, a woman comes to meet him. Different kind of woman. Dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. She's trying to lure him in. She's got bait hanging all over. She is boisterous and she's rebellious. Her feet do not remain at home. She's out clubbing. And yes, I said clubbing with a G at the end, not clubbing, I guess. White boy clubbing. She is now, look what it says, she is now in the streets, now in the square. She's all over town. She's hanging out. She wants to be known. She wants to be seen. She lurks by every corner. How seductive does that sound? She lurks. That's what thieves do, right? And she seizes him and she kisses him. It's just like Potiphar's wife, isn't it? Just like Potiphar's wife. Dads, if you find yourself saying to your teenage daughter, sweetie, girls don't call boys. Boys call girls. And you're not even ready for that yet, but that's another story. Girls don't call boys. Girls don't pursue. Guys pursue. If you hear yourself say that, and then you think to yourself, that's probably just old-fashioned, and I should lighten up and get with the times. That sounds like Leave It to Beaver. I just watched too much of that as a kid. Remember, think again, remember this is rooted in a biblical dynamic. And one of the best discussions of this is in a book recommended on the back of the sermon notes page. There are five books back there we'd recommend on this topic. The very first one by Doug Wilson, Her Hand in Marriage, has a whole chapter on parental authority, and then each chapter on guy and girl would be appropriate to this discussion of men pursuing and women responding. Sarah and I have an interesting story about this because I was the pursuer and she was the responder, except it's a bad combination when you've got a stubborn responder and a shy, not good with the ladies kind of pursuer, like pursuing. I mean, I still wanted to write notes and stuff in college, like, you know, ask her friend if she'll go out with me. That I was that bad. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story about that. We'd been friends all through Sarah's senior year. It was my junior year. She was about to graduate. We'd only been friends. I'd been trying to, you know, cast it out there, try to get something back. Not sure. I just thought, I don't think I'm anything more than a friend, but we really like each other. We'd laugh a lot. We're good friends. We hadn't done any real dating or anything like that. In fact, you had to ask, it's kind of known around the campus on our Christian college, that you have to ask Sarah Abbas's dad if you want to start dating her. But you don't just call him up. He says yes, and then you go, your dad said we have to go out. You know, you can't do that. So I had to kind of feel out a little bit with her before I could even ask her dad if that's something he would allow me to do. But I had to kind of give a little green light from her first. And so, the last week before she graduates from college, I think, if she goes and I never see her again, I'm going to kick myself the rest of my life. I'm going to so regret this. I just need to be aggressive about this and tell her how I feel. And so we went out for coffee, and I chickened out. And then we sat in the car for a little bit before she went up to her room, and I chickened out again. And so I decided to call her. And I, you know, paced for a long while, wrote down some notes and that kind of thing, and finally called her, and this is what I came up with. After graduation, I'd like us to still stay in touch and be friends. And she went, yeah, sure, of course. So I hung up, and that wasn't it. So I called her back again. I called her back and said, that wasn't it at all. I want to tell you, I really like you. I mean, really, really like you. And I think maybe someday we can get married, but we got to start, you know, talking towards that and going, I don't know. So it was real awkward, but I was at least real honest by that point. And so point being, this setup makes young men be men. Right? That's not a very good example of a man, I guess. But I also wasn't waiting on her, and she was a patient, godly woman who knew to be the responder and not the aggressive pursuer. Fourth, reconsider the category of recreational dating. Reconsider the category of recreational dating. By recreational dating, I mean dating that doesn't go anywhere. Dating that is an end in itself. Dating that's just for fun. Dating when you think you're not ready to be married. Or dating when everyone around you, including you, knows you're not ready to be married. So reconsider that category, both for teenagers who are not ready to be married, junior high, high school, and reconsider the category of recreational dating throughout your 20s when you're just stalling on marriage. Let me take each of those separately. First, the teen years. We assume that pop culture's concept of recreational dating, of just having fun, of just getting to know each other, is harmless. But in Scripture, romance and passion is reserved for the pursuit of marriage, or unto marriage, you could say, or it's within marriage. There's some romance going on in Song of Solomon before there's actually marriage, but man, marriage is right around the corner. I mean, you get the feeling they're engaged almost. It's not, we're trying this out, we're experimenting, we're seeing if we're compatible or something like that. It says in Proverbs 6:27, you can't put fire into your bosom and not get burned. I think that's fire in your bosom. You can get burned in doing this. Sarah's parents talked about this with her when she was growing up, and we talk about it with our kids now. We'll talk about it more as they get older. But we say, why would you pursue a relationship with a boy when you know it can't go anywhere for years? And when you know 99.999% chance you're not going to like this guy in a year, or he's not going to like you? Why would you stir up passions that you know can't be fulfilled until marriage, at the height of when these passions are starting to blossom, if not burst? Why would you ride an emotional roller coaster of becoming boyfriend and girlfriend, getting dumped, back and forth, different people, all the drama? Girls, why would you ride that emotional roller coaster through your most emotionally complicated years? Right? I've been to youth camp, so I know, as a kid and as, you know, as a teacher and counselor, I know that those are horrible years for you to let some dork play with your heart. Right? I mean, they're They're just boys and they're dumb. And you let them jerk your heart around. It's just so unwise. Parents, remember, you can set boundaries about this. You can say you're not going to do it. You can say, why would you get romantic? Why would you play house with somebody that you can't actually one day do this with? Why would you stir up things? Why would you set yourself up for harm when it's years away? Reconsider the category of singleness too. For 20-somethings, let me put on my sociologist hat for just a second. Bear with me. If you say, I've been single for 32 years. Oh, so when you were 14, people referred to you as a single person? Right? This is my son. He's 14. He's single. What? Why don't we talk about a 14-year-old single person? You know why? They're not supposed to be married. They're children. That's a biblical category. Children who are unmarried. Then you get to be adult. And the norm in Scripture, the normal expression of adulthood in Scripture is marriage. Is it possible that our culture has so prolonged youth and immaturity and growing up, we've prolonged growing up and encouraged youth and immaturity, that we have kind of invented a category which you can kind of be adult, but you can kind of be a dork. You can kind of goof off. You can kind of be irresponsible. I mean, it's Friends, right? It's Seinfeld. It's never settle down, never finally get one of those and ruin your life and ruin your fun and ruin your friends. Yes, 1 Corinthians 7 has the category of the gift of celibacy. But that's not singleness like we talk about it in our American culture. That's not the 20-something who refuses to grow up, or the 30-something nowadays that refuses to grow up. Parents, do you know that it's not just marriage that for a lot of our 20-somethings is put off for fear of commitment? Dating nowadays is seen as too much commitment. The alternative? Hooking up. Or friends with benefits. These kinds of things where you can have physical relationships, but they don't have to mean anything, they don't have to go anywhere, you don't have to commit, you don't have to buy Christmas presents. We live in that kind of a culture. Now, I know women, unmarried ladies, I know this is hard for you to not be the pursuer when you're in your 20s and your 30s and you're not married yet. I know it's hard for you to hear a message on the normal thing for adults is marriage unless they have the gift of celibacy, which 1 Corinthians 7 describes. So I know that's hard, but guys, let me point it back to you. Unmarried guys, quit putting our young ladies in this tough spot of not being married and wanting to be because you won't grow up. Get married. Find a good girl and start doing what you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to do, what God made you to do. Girls, in the meantime, pray and do all that you can. Do all with your heart and with your work what God has given you to do. Let me give you some specifics now. Very quickly, there'll be 7 quick specifics. What to be and what to look for in this kind of a spouse. Remember, it's Proverbs 31, which we're looking at, the excellent wife, what she's like. And remember, guys, this is what to look for and becoming the kind of man that this girl would marry. And for girls, this is what to be and what to pursue, whether in marriage or not. What is she like? She's hardworking first. She's hardworking. Look at verse 15. She rises while it's still night and gives food to her household. Or verse 18. She senses that her gain is good. She assesses her own productivity and says this is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She's not lazy. She's hard working. Secondly, her strength and wisdom is shown in adversity. Look at verse 21. She's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. Now, of course, this is talking about capital M, mom of the house. But what does it look like for her daughters? What do the Proverbs 31 young women look like in this house? Well, just like moms prepared for the snow, their daughters are prepared for what they have to do. What does it look like for a college girl? Well, it means she turns her papers in on time. She's not surprised by due dates. She's not surprised by deadlines. She's not flighty. She's not flippant. Her strength and wisdom is shown even in adversity. How does she react when it's hard? What does it say in verse 25? Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. What's that mean? Whatever tomorrow is going to bring, she can smile at it. It might be hard, it might be easy, it might be bad, it might be good, but she can smile at it with a confidence. She's confident and strong and wise, and she trusts God. I think there's some theological elements there. I knew when I was looking for a wife in college, I wanted a girl who had a firm grasp of the sovereignty of God. You know why? I didn't think I could go through marriage being on a different page on that issue than my wife. I didn't think I could go through marriage with her all worried about what's going to happen, how's it going to turn out, and oh no, instead of trying to be, I know it's a battle to do this, but you have to, and I think wives should do this and teach it to their kids, to be strong even in the face of adversity, to smile even at the future knowing that God is in control. Thirdly, she's selfless. Serving others. She cares for her family. Verse 13, she looks for wool and flax, and she works with her hands in delight. Or verse 27, she looks well to the ways of her household. She cares about others. She cares specifically for her family here. But in verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. She stretches out her hands to the needy. She doesn't just touch those who happen to be near her, who affect her. If you serve your home, there's some way in which you do that sometimes in order to reap your own benefits of it, right? I mean, why do I clean the house sometimes? Well, partly because it honors my wife and helps her, but partly because it helps me and benefits me and promotes a godly, peaceable home in some way, in some shape, some form. Why do we do what we do? We do it, yes, for others, sometimes for ourselves, but when we serve the poor, we're only serving others, right? You don't do that because you get something out of it. She's serving others, including the poor. Fourth, she's a homemaker. Verse 15, she rises while it's still night and gives food to her household. Or in verse 27 at the beginning, she looks well to the ways of her household. She is a homemaker. It doesn't mean that she can't have any kind of outside job. The woman in Proverbs 31 is actually outside the home sometimes to do work that makes money. But there's no way in which you can see this woman in Proverbs 31 and think that her domain is not the home. Her domain is the home. Unlike men, unlike husbands, they manage the home. And young girls who aren't yet married, who maybe still live with mom and dad, they're growing up to be homemakers. We're not just raising men to be men, or boys to be men. We're raising young men to one day be husbands and fathers. We're not just raising girls to one day be college graduates, or to one day get married. We're raising them even in their early years, before teen years, during their teen years. We're raising them in order to be godly wives, godly mothers. She's a homemaker. Fifth, her beauty is not just skin deep. Her beauty is not just skin deep. There's a beauty about her delightfulness in verse 13. Even in her work, she delights. She's not complaining about her hard work. She's delightful in her hard work. She has strength and confidence. That's part of who she is in an inner beauty. Verse 25, strength and dignity are her clothing. What's that mean? Her appearance is not just in her clothes. Her appearance is shown in the inner strength and the inner dignity that's almost as clear, almost as visible as clothes. What does it say towards the end? Verse 30 of Proverbs 31. charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord shall be praised. In a book written primarily to young men, the second from last verse is this reminder. Young men, charm is deceitful. Beauty is vain. Beauty is empty. Because no matter how beautiful this girl is that you marry, you get old together. You get a wrinkle together. Charm is deceitful. Charm is the exterior. You see it coming. It looks good on the outside. You say, I want that. Charm, though, is deceitful because it looks good and it seems alluring, but it's only skin deep. It's only a smile deep. It's only a wink deep. And if there isn't something more below, then there isn't much there at all. Proverbs elsewhere talks about beauty that's only skin deep. Proverbs 11:22. As a ring of gold in a pig's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. A pretty girl with a loose tongue might be really interesting at first, but then you find out you've married a pig with a nose ring. That's what it says, right? It's only skin deep. Or Proverbs 6:25. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her capture you with her eyes. Don't desire, this is a commandment, guys. Don't desire her beauty in your heart. Does it mean do not notice beauty? No. Does it mean find the ugliest one I can? Sure, if you want, but I didn't take that approach. I kind of took a middle ground. What I meant was, on a list of priorities, external beauty cannot be number one. What I mean is that it may be relevant to you, and it may be more relevant to you than it is to others, but be careful. In our culture, it's not number one, it's everything. It's everything. Don't desire her beauty in your heart. Don't cherish her beauty. Why? Well, it's deceiving. Sometimes pretty girls are witches. And beauty is vain. It's empty. It's only on the skin. Her character, sixth, her character is reflected in her words. In verse 26, she opens her mouth in wisdom. The teaching of kindness is on her tongue. Just listen to these references elsewhere in Proverbs about the trouble of a wife with an uncontrolled tongue. Let me give you several of them so you see that it's no small theme in Proverbs. Chapter 12, verse 4. Excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness in his bones. Dump the girl that embarrasses you, that mocks you in front of other people. That's not going to make for a good marriage. Chapter 9, verse 13, the woman of folly is boisterous. She's naive and knows nothing. Chapter 21, verse 9, it's better to live in the corner of a roof than a house shared with a contentious woman. Or chapter 27, verse 15, the last one, a constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. How many young guys have married the pretty, cool party girl only to find out that they married a dripping faucet that they can't turn off? It's what it says. It's put in very crude terms, isn't it? And people who are in those kind of relationships appreciate the honesty because they feel it. Again, go back to this. You married the wrong girl. You married a drippy faucet. You married a contentious wife. You find yourself sleeping in the corner of the rooftop. Trust God in His sovereignty. He has you where He has you. Pray. Pray for yourself. Pray for them. And be what God has called you to be. Seventh, she fears the Lord. She fears the Lord. In verse 30, charm is deceitful, beauty is vain. Here's inner beauty. A woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Look for the one that fears the Lord, let alone the one That's a Christian. 1 Corinthians 7 says, Christians are supposed to marry Christians. And I think the wisdom extension here would be, Christians are supposed to date Christians. I mean, if we're talking in the same terms of what we've said before, that dating and courtship is unto marriage, romance is unto marriage, towards marriage, then missionary dating, trying to win them over with your love, it makes for very difficult times because one of two things can happen, both are bad. One of two things can happen. Here's one, they're going to believe in Jesus just to get you off of their back and so that your dad will let him marry you. Or they won't believe in Jesus, but your heart will be so entwined for them that what you said you wouldn't do, namely marry a non-Christian, now you're willing to do once your heart is all wrapped up in it. Don't do that. Parents, draw the line there. We just don't do this in our house. Read 1 Corinthians 7 about that thing of two becoming one when one is not of Christ. It's not good and it should be off limits in our churches more than it is. Guys, remember to become the kind of man that this girl would want. There's one last thing to discuss, maybe the most important here. I think many unmarried people who want to get married right now and as soon as possible, please, think of marriage as the fix-all for their problems. I did. I thought it would be great. I had too much optimism about how smooth it would be and how easy it would be and, you know, never thought I would have any kind of struggle with lust after that. I mean, after all, now you can, you know, that's next week. And next week we won't say you know. You think it's the fix-all, but it's not. Remember that marriage is a picture of our relationship with God, of His love for us, His purifying of us. But remember that God is not the analogy and the biggest reality is marriage. Marriage is the shadow of the bigger reality, which is God and His love for us. God designed marriage not as an end in itself, but as an illustration that would show us something in concrete right before us, flesh and blood terms, what His love is like and what sacrifice is like and what purification is like. God is ultimate. Marriage is not ultimate. One day when Jesus comes back and restores His creation to what it's supposed to be in the new heaven and the new earth, marriage will be no more. I don't know what that means about how you relate to your wife then. Or how you relate to your wives then. That'll be interesting. But I know that marriage will not be like it is now. Because the picture has been finally fulfilled. God has come. The marriage has finally come. The ultimate marriage has finally come, and we've dined at the wedding feast. Now, we want, in the meantime, to get the analogy right of marriage, that it's a picture of God in His love for us through Christ, Christ's love for the church and His purifying of it. We want to pursue, as guys, we want to pursue the girl because it's a picture of God pursuing us. The church didn't go looking for Jesus. Jesus went redeeming His church. That's why, guys, you must be the pursuer. Marriage is a picture. He's the pursuer. Men are to lead their wives in truth and holiness because Christ leads us and purifies us as His bride. But we should remember, too, where the analogy, God's love for us, our love for husband and wife, where the analogy does not fit. You would not marry, I hope, someone who, as a Christian, you would not marry someone who isn't interested in God, who's not a Christian, who doesn't prioritize God and His truth and His ways and His glory. Not many men, if any, will pursue a woman to be married to her that he doesn't find lovely. And that's usually a combination of inner beauty and outer beauty. But he finds her lovely. The analogy does not fit here. God pursued us when we were not pursuing His ways. God did not come to us because we could be spiritual leaders. God did not come to us because we were good. He came to us when we were running away. It wasn't mutual. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. Oh, but he's stubborn in his love. And he set his love on us, not because we were lovely like we do with men and with women. We love the lovely. There's no way around it. You have to keep loving even when it isn't lovely. That's where the picture does shine forth. The picture is real then. But you did not pursue your spouse exactly because they were unlovely, because they were lovely in your eyes. Not God. He came to us even while we were unlovely. He didn't come to us because we were cute. Because this is two cool people getting together, it'll make a great relationship. He came to us. Him, the Creator, the Holy One, us, the creatures, the rebels. What does that mean for your marriage? It means, or your non-marriage, it means no matter where you find yourself in relation to marriage. Not in one? Not interested in one? You're in a bad one? You're in a good one, but you know it's imperfect, like every one of them is this side of heaven? We fix our eyes on the one who loves us more. The one who loves us better. The Father who loves us better than any father could. Not least yours. The husband who loves us better than any husband could. Not least yours. He is the Lord, and there's none besides him. And we're thankful for his gift of marriage. Where it points us to him, we're thankful for it. And where it doesn't point us to him, we'll then praise him that at that point, there is no distraction. And you must fix your eyes on him and him alone. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your word and for your truth and for the gospel that we have in Jesus. Thank you for marriage. Thank you for these marriages here. Be glorified in our homes, according to your word, by your Spirit, because of Jesus, our Savior, our husband, the Lord. Amen.